Welcome, everybody, to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. This is Corinne, and as we usually do, let's come together in silence for a few moments. Turning within to that quiet, still space of love within that we all share. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. And taking a few mindful breaths and bringing our awareness together to our perception of right here, right now. All right, so in the Sparkle Edition, we're on page 284. It is chapter 12. And the subheading is called The Fear of Redemption. So again, that's page 284 in the Sparkle Edition. In the original edition, it is page 239. It's also under the subheading, The Fear of Redemption. In the original edition, it's chapter 12, part 3. And last but not least, in the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, we are on page 242. It's also, the subheading is also The Fear of Redemption. In the FIP edition, it's chapter 13, part 3. All right. Here we go. The fear of redemption. You may wonder why it is so crucial that you look upon your hatred and realize its full extent. You may also think that it would be easy enough for the Holy Spirit to show it to you and dispel it without the need for you to raise it to awareness yourself. Yet there is one more complication which you have interposed between yourself and the atonement, which you do not yet realize. We have said that no one will countenance fear if he recognizes it. Yet, in your disordered state, you are not afraid of fear. You do not like it, but it is not your desire to attack which really frightens you. You are not seriously disturbed by your hostility. You keep it hidden because you are more afraid of what it covers. So we will pause there.
Yeah, that's a good place to pause.
Yeah. So, any initial comments or questions? I'll just say a few things that come to mind for me, and then if anybody has anything further to share, please do. So, this is touching on a few things, one of which is that it's our responsibility to bring our fears to the Holy Spirit. So it says very clearly in the beginning that it seems like it would just be easy enough for the Holy Spirit to just show us, you know, what we need to look at and dispel it without our doing anything. And yet, because we made fear, we are responsible for bringing that fear to the Holy Spirit to be corrected. So the correction piece is not our part. It's simply just, again, that willingness, that tiny bit of willingness to bring the fear, whatever form it takes, the guilt, again, whatever form it takes, to the Holy Spirit to be reinterpreted. The piece that it says that there's another complication which we have interposed between ourselves and the atonement is that we have sort of become confused and are not afraid of fear. There's parts, let's say there's certain forms of fear that we don't really like, but it doesn't really frighten us. What we're really actually afraid of is the love of God. So beneath all of, we've talked about thinking about, you know, the layers of fear that we have in our mind as like an onion, all the different layers of an onion. at the, it's funny because I was just working on, I think I've shared before that I'm working on a book and I have meditations going along with the book. And in one of the meditations, I was writing about this, that at the core of the onion is actually love. And where would you wouldn't think to look for love beneath all these stinky layers of an onion, right? So it's a good sort of metaphor for the world, that as we go deeper and deeper and deeper into these layers of fear that we've come up with, what we're actually really afraid of is the love of God, because we're afraid that if we recognized it, we would abandon the world and abandon these ideas of being separate selves, and we actually would, because we would recognize the joy and the truth of who we really are. So we're more afraid of the love of God than we are of anything else that, you know, could be frightening.
Okay, this is Sue.
Yeah.
I have my intellect is questioning that, because I have experienced the love of God.
Uh-huh.
I'm assuming it's the love of God, because it's something that certainly is not of me, and I wouldn't trade it for mm-hmm. anything. When mm-hmm. I am in that presence, you know, and you are just enveloped in this, and all fear goes, but yet it can be in a half an hour. Mm-hmm. I'm gripped by some kind of fear or mm-hmm. something, but I'm not afraid. You know what? It's just curious. Well, why can't all the fear just go away then? Because I
right.
have experienced the love. I'm no longer afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
I am no longer afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting right here, I am not afraid of the love of God. But that's saying that there really is something in me that is?
It's the Course is talking about a deep unconscious part of the mind. And so, like you, I also have had those experiences, and I think we all have on the call, of experiencing the love of God, experiencing those holy instants, those moments of revelation. And yet, why don't we stay there? You know, why don't they last and last and last? It's because we choose to retreat back into being identified as a separate self, into, you know, retreating into fear, however it is you want to, whatever words it is that you want to use.
Well, it's the unconsciousness, I guess, the sleeping mind.
I'm sorry?
Mind. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. And that's
I do feel like it.
I feel like I do go into like an unconscious kind of a...
Yeah, it's our vacillation. We just vacillate, you know, we touch on that love of God. We have those beautiful experiences, and then, you know, we might find an hour later, like, where did that go, you know? And so that's just that vacillating that we do, because we haven't fully made up our minds and planted both of our feet permanently and fully in the Holy Spirit's camp. We still think, oh, well, maybe there's, you know, a few things here in this world that can work out okay, and that I can actually, you know, be happy here. It's that vacillation that we all do. And so the deep unconscious layers that we hold in our mind are that, you know, they're unconscious, and we can, through doing the Course, through doing even the exercise by Nook Santez that I posted on the Miracle Share group last week about exposing your unconscious fears of God, you know, there's things that we can do to bring up those unconscious beliefs and fears, to look at them with the Holy Spirit. Because that's our simple responsibility, is to just bring whatever it is that's coming up to the Holy Spirit to be undone. So your experiences of touching the love of God are real. That's the most real thing that we have here. It's just, you know, why don't we stay there? And we don't stay there because, you know, there's something in us that retreats. And it's okay, because it's part of our journey and learning that is actually what we really want. We want those experiences. We want to know the love of God all the time.
And I do want to make a disclaimer. Last week I sort of poo-pooed, I can't say it, Ho'oponopono. What is that Hawaiian?
Oh, the Ho'oponopono.
And I thought, you know, Susan, you didn't give that a try. You just, you know, here again, the intellect thinks, you know, you know, mm-hmm. I know everything. Mm-hmm. Well, I have some really severe memories that when I bring them into my the screen of my mind, I can go there, and I'm my heart's pounding and everything. And I thought, okay, I'm going to try that with this. I'm sorry. And son of a gun, if that didn't change that memory.
Oh, wow.
It changed that memory completely.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
That is beautiful.
Yeah. So, I have to quit thinking. I know everything.
Right. And that's only another,
nothing.
And that's where all the freedom comes from, is when we remember that we know nothing, you know. That's when.
Know nothing.
Yep. We set ourselves back up for those massive miracles when we get into that space of, I don't know.
Yeah, and the one thing in the first paragraph, the one thing that just really jumps out at me, I mean, there's many things to be afraid of, including God, I would say, too. But ultimately, in that relationship, to me, the ultimate fear, and we've spent time on this in the last couple of weeks, it's death, right? Isn't that the ultimate fear? Because there's also the sense that God really kind of, you know, I don't want to use the word control. He doesn't control it, but he lets it occur, that kind of thing. So to me, it's...
Well, so, okay, so the courses would say that a little bit differently. God doesn't know death. And so death is an idea that we've collectively agreed upon to prove that if death is real, God must be dead. We must not be eternal beings. God doesn't actually know death. And now there is a part in the Course that says that God honors even our miscreation. So if we're pumping belief into this thing called death because we're choosing to believe in it, God's not going to interfere because we were given free will, and God's going to, you know, honor our miscreation. So death isn't something that God knows. It's not something that God is letting happen, because again, God doesn't know it. It's a concept. It's an idea that we've made up as evidence that we must be separate from God. And so I would actually say, and I think that we will read this tonight, what it was actually talking about in this paragraph, the last sentence where it says, you keep it hidden because you are more afraid of what it covers. The Course is actually leading us to see that the actual biggest fear is the love of God, that we actually choose death instead of waking up to the love of God. It's that idea of the ego wanting us to seemingly die before we will recognize that we can't die.
Thank you for clarifying.
Did that make sense?
That's the confusion. It is. It's very confusing.
Corinne,
I'm still scared, but I see where you're going, though. Absolutely.
Yeah. So death. So our fear of death, or our belief in death, is another belief to take to the Holy Spirit, to look at with the Holy Spirit, to say literally, like, you know, this scares me, I believe in it, I think it's real, whatever, and Holy Spirit, I'm willing to look at it with you, whatever words it is that you want to use with that, because it's death is actually nothing. It's actually nothing. Carol, did I hear you?
Yeah, I'm struggling a little bit with this. There were two people in our town that were suddenly, you know, off this earth this week.
Mm.
And I, you know, read the Course, Abraham, you know, all that. And what you were just talking about, death, and you talked about the love of God,
mm-hmm.
like in my mind, you know, like I think they did choose the love of God, You know, like you said, there is no death, but, you know, they feel the love of God. Is that, am I feeling confused with this.
So we have, you know, I mean, I also welcome other people's thoughts on this, because I know, you know, Deidre runs the End of Death Study Group, and so I welcome others' input on this as well. My sense is that, you know, we judging, I feel like it's best to practice, again, that idea of I don't know, you know, based on, like, the form of how somebody leaves. That person could have awoken at the last moment before they chose to, you know, leave their body. Like, yes,
right.
You could come and choose for the ego again and, you know, come back here, or, you know, at that moment of death. I think of the story of, there's a book called The Afterlife of Billy Fingers, and it's a book about a woman whose brother died, you know, a painful death. He led a very painful life. He died, I don't remember how, I think he was hit by a car and a car wreck or something, and he started speaking to her after he was out of his body and just describing, you know, what it was like and how he's, you know, not coming back, and, you know, that lifetime was the last one for him, and you never would have guessed that based on the appearance of his life here. And so, you know, I think the form in which somebody leaves, it's best to just give that to the Holy Spirit, because, you know, we don't know. And do other folks have thoughts on that? Or tell me, Carol, what's coming up based on what I just said.
Well, the strange thing is, what's playing in my mind is something that Abraham has talked about, which is, you know how when a deer runs out in front of a car,
mm-hmm.
it's like, it's that split second of, you know, going like full circle kind of thing. I don't know exactly how Abraham describes it, but it feels like, you know, my understanding or my memory of the way Abraham talks about this is that it's a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Like that deer made a choice to, you know, circle around, or, you know, I'm using that term, circle around, but I mean to make their transition.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand what the Course says about there is no death, and that's why, I mean, Abraham says that too, that there is no death. And, you know, so it's sort of like you're going out of that body because, you know, to the world, that body isn't there anymore. And yet the Course also says that we attach to these bodies and they're not real. Is that right?
Right. Yes, that's
okay.
Exactly what I was going to say. We were never
okay.
in the body to begin with.
Correct.
So
correct.
We're not.
Yeah.
You know, to talk about it's one of those sort of mind bending things with the Course. Like to talk about, you know, leaving the body. Like we're making an assumption that it's real and it feels
right.
really real. I mean, we can't
right.
deny that obviously while we're here. But, you know, That's just the phrase that came up for me, is that we're, you know, we're not in these bodies to begin with. We've just, there's part of our mind that's tricked ourselves into thinking that we are. And the Course talks, you know, a lot about how the body is absolutely nothing. It's completely neutral. Nook Sanchez, again, I'm just recalling, hold on a second, it's coming back to me. I was reading, I think it was one of her recent blog posts, and it was an excerpt from her next book. And I'm hoping I can recall enough of it to be helpful. But if you think about I feel like I'm not going to explain this as well as she did, but I could try to find the blog post and I could also share that in Miracle Share. If you think about a projector and, you know, a movie theater, so you have the screen with the image on it, and then you have the projector, which is projecting that image onto the screen. We, in our confused state, will go up to the screen and think not only that that's who we are, but that if we change things or manipulate things, you know, that we can
mm-hmm.
fix the image.
Right.
And if you think about it from the perspective of a movie theater, that makes no sense, right? To do any kind of change, it would have to be from the projection itself. And that was sort of, you know, a theme of this blog post of hers, is that this, everything that we're experiencing here is simply a projection of our mind. And we've confused ourselves because we've identified with the screen rather than, and what the course is leading us to do is to start to see who the dreamer is. In fact, that, you know, we are the dreamer of this dream, and that we're not limited to the screen, that it's, you know, the projection source that we, you know, are coming to see. That's sort of
it's taking responsibility. And just the I mentioned a little while ago how I could change that memory. The memory that I had was extremely distressing to me. And when I went back in my mind, the mind does not know, is this happening now or is it something in the past? If it's on the screen of your awareness, it's happening now as far as your mind is concerned. Mm-hmm. And if it was very emotional, you feel the same emotions, your heart starts beating, just like in a night dream. So, but the, I did the, that I'm sorry, I love, forgive me, I love, and slowly I calmed down. And when I went back to that, it was completely neutral. So I had changed the.
That projection sort of changed rather
than
the screen.
So if my mind could do that with an individual memory and change it to something completely neutral.
Right.
Think of what our collective mind is doing with the thoughts of death and sickness and all of that. We're projecting that onto the screen of the world. Every single one of us are doing that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Corinne.
Just one other thing. When you were talking about people passing away, Carol, my mother-in-law was not a she didn't go to church. She didn't read spiritual stuff. And she died a very painful death. She died of idiopathic something. Anyway, her lungs got filled with scar tissue. And she basically drowned to death. And it was very painful. But her daughters asked a minister, what should I tell my mother? And he says, just tell her to go to the light. Tell her to go to the light. And when we were at the gravesite, her three children, my husband included, were at the gravesite. I might have mentioned this. If I did I mention this?
No.
No, okay. They were attending to her grave, and we had just buried her. And I was standing off to the side watching them and saying a little prayer. And I felt someone come up behind me, and then I turned around to speak to them, but there wasn't anybody there.
Hmm.
And all of a sudden I heard, not in my mind, but in my mind, I heard, please tell them I am fine.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I just got goosebumps.
Oh. And that was as real as anything.
Mm-hmm.
So at that last moment, she made that decision to go into the light.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows?
Awesome. Oh, thank you, Sue, for sharing that. That was really helpful. Deidre.
Yeah, I'm just was listening as Carol was talking, and there's a workbook lesson. I can't recall the number. Maybe you'll remember, Corinne, but it's the one about renouncing death in all its forms.
Mm.
Are you familiar with that one?
Is it the God did not create it and so it is not real, that one? Or
it could be. That's part of the lesson. But anyways, I just as we were talking about death, and what kept coming up for me is that really our earthly experience here is really about learning to trust and reframe our whole belief system around death. So what we think as death in terms of the transition of the body, leaving the body, is simply one form of death. But there are other, you know, choices that we make that are actually, we're unknowingly, unconsciously, we are making the choice to feed the ego's belief in death, whether it be like a cold or anger or depression. These are all forms of death. These are all forms of, you know, not love. It's the form of death. So just having that awareness, and I learned this in Lisa Natoli's program, it just helped me build my awareness of how much investment I place in something when I choose to let my mind go to that place. And obviously, you know, the experience with my dad transitioning recently has really helped me to learn in a really tangible way that, you know, what we think of death in terms of leaving the physical body, the physical awareness, there is no end. You know, like, I'm still able to talk to my dad, receive love and messages from him, signs in the physical world that represent, you know, things that are meaningful to him. And it's beginning to happen with other people, and I'm able to deliver messages from, you know, heaven or energy or whatever you want to call it. But it's just, like, to me, it's a reframing of every thought system, every belief system that we think that death is. Mm-hmm. And so for Carol, as I was listening to you talk, what kept coming up is just being willing to look at and put into words, or maybe even write it down, like, where in the situation that is occurring on your projector screen, where is the discomfort?
I am sensitive to energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I live in a small town where these people were very prominent. So I just know that, you know, for me, I like to reach out to people and express love, you know, and I think I just need to take some time and go within and decide how I'm going to go about doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, 'cause I do get attached to, all right, the family members and, you know, all that kind of, I'll use the word drama. I know that sounds a little blunt, but, you know, the drama of it. And,
But I think we have to, but Carol, I think we need to be real too. I mean, we're not there yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, you know, whatever you want to express. I'm so sorry. I know you're going to miss them. Just acknowledge. I think that's to be artificial and stuff. I don't think the Course is asking us to do that.
No.
And because I did that for a while at the beginning. Oh, I have to say the right thing. I can't. You know. But that's, you know, those people are going to grieve, and they're going to grieve for their loved ones, and it's okay to say that.
Yeah, it's okay if we're grieving too. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I think that, like, when I've listened to Deidre speak about her father, and I know from my father-in-law, I feel closer to my father-in-law now than, you know, when he was. I mean, not that I wasn't close with him, but, you know, it's a whole different feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And so these people, I wasn't close to on the earth, if you know what I mean. I mean, I didn't have interaction with them on a regular basis. But for some reason, in hearing about these families' loss, I have a sense of it. I don't know how else to put that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So for me, like, what's coming up is it's it's activated something within you.
Okay.
So it's like, again, there's no separation between any one of us here in earthly bodies, right? So this experience has activated something for you to look at within yourself.
Okay, thank you. Yeah,
just
I'm
so
sure
that
it has.
So you have a chance to sort of look at it and just look at it. That's the only thing that we're required to do is look at it with the Holy Spirit when you're ready,
yeah,
and not before.
I thank everybody very, very much. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I cherish this hour, and I know that I love to listen to everybody's words of wisdom, so thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, thank you, Carol. You know, Deidre, I was really resonating with what you were saying, and it reminded me, too, of, I don't know if I'm going to be able to retrieve it, but just Jesus healed the sick and raised the dead because he remembered wholly who he was. As we all are as well. And so when we, to put it in my own words, Deidre, what you were just saying, with, you know, perhaps it has elicited something, you know, to be looked at. It's never about anybody else out there. It's never about, you know, what happened to them or that person, you know, their experience. It's all about what comes up in us as a result of what we are perceiving, because again, like Deidre, like you were saying, there's you know, we're all interconnected, there's no one else out there, and so everything that comes up is coming up as an opportunity to look at it with the Holy Spirit. It's an opportunity for us to heal that block through the Holy Spirit that we have in our mind, because if we are seeing it out there, I go back to that saying, you spot it, you got it. If you're seeing it out there, it's a thought to be healed in our mind. So if we're seeing it on that projector screen, it's a thought to be healed back in the projection room by looking at it with the Holy Spirit. So it's always an inward job for ourselves. And by doing so, that's how we heal the sick and raise the dead, by allowing our own minds to be healed, because then we're doing something that's benefiting everyone, not just us. Not just
yeah,
us.
I'm also, like, Spirit just gave me that quote in the course that talks about demonstrate that I did not die by demonstrating that I live in you.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. You know, so... That for me was such a different way of looking at the crucifixion, because the emphasis in my previous spiritual teachings was always on, you know, the death part of it, right? But actually the course is focusing on the resurrection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that there is no death, so...
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
Very,
and
very
think,
helpful. Thank you.
I think we would kind of compromise. I know I did before I got to the course about death. If there was someone that I would go to a viewing, and recently my sister-in-law passed away at a relatively young age, and my sister and I were standing there and touched, you know, the body, and it hard, and you know, and Sally, my sister, looked at me and she says, that's not Kim. Well, yeah, no, it's not Kim. I mean, that's obvious. But when the Course says we try to reconcile the fact that that's a part of Kim, and then there's another part of Kim that's gone on beyond, Where Jesus, I hope my interpretation is right, is that part of Kim was never part of Kim.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That part that was lying in that casket is not
right.
ever,
right.
nor was ever Kim.
Right. It's like
mm-hmm.
just a marionette that we were playing with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But we try to kind of mixed the two and say, well, that, you know, that was her earth suit and all that kind of stuff, and you don't have a nurse suit.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another thing that just came back to mind for me, Deidre, when you were sharing earlier, I just wanted to throw this out there too, because this is something that I am noticing right now that I've not been vigilant for recently, and I'm so glad that we're talking about this. The many, many ways in which we call for death, we call forth death in many different forms. You were talking about this earlier, Deidre, like just a tiny stab of a headache or feeling tired, you know, believing, that it's the body that's in need of healing. These are all these little things that we do all the time that are actually strengthening our belief in death rather than undoing it. And so it's not that we don't, you know, force ourselves to, like, not take the Tylenol or, like, you know, just sort of will ourselves out of being tired. It's that in any, you know, if we're experiencing anything other than peace and joy, our simple task, again, is just to have that tiny bit of willingness to bring it to the Holy Spirit to see it differently.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just glad that thought came back for me based on what you were saying earlier, Deidre, because that's something that I feel like I have just forgotten about recently, and I'm willing to be more vigilant again.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, too, because I was, you know, pulling from, you know, pretty late nights lately for homework and stuff, and I noticed myself saying, you know, I feel tired, and then I caught myself, and I was like, why am I telling myself this story? Like, I'm not tired. I'm, you know,
I'm sorry, go on.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it actually says in the course, let me see if I can find it really quick, and by the way, I'm not sure if this is the lesson you were referring to, Deidre. It's lesson 14, God did not create a meaningless world. And you go on and say, God did not create that war, and so it is not real. God did not create that airplane crash, and so it is not real. I'm not sure if that's the lesson that you were thinking of, but that was just the one that came to mind for me.
I think it's a later one, but that's okay.
It's all good. there is a section in the course that says, I found it. It's in Chapter 3 of the Foundation for Inner Peace Edition, Part 6, Paragraph 5. It says, all this makes you feel tired because it is essentially disheartening. You are not really capable of being tired, but you are very capable of wearying yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The strain of constant judgment is virtually intolerable. It's curious that an ability so debilitating would be so deeply cherished. So right there it says in black and white, you are not really capable of being tired, but you are capable of wearying yourself. So I love that line, because the moments that I feel tired and I'm like, oh, just like you said, it's a story I'm telling myself, I can take that story to the Holy Spirit and ask to see it differently. Have we really only read one paragraph?
I was just thinking that.
Chatty group.
Oh, it's been so helpful. Let's read some more. You could look even upon the ego's darkest cornerstone without fear. If you did not believe that, without the ego, you would find within yourself something you fear even more. You are not afraid of crucifixion. Your real terror is of your real terror is of redemption. Under the ego's dark foundation is the memory of God, and it is of this that you are really afraid. For this memory would instantly restore you to your proper place, and it is this place that you have sought to leave. So again, here it's saying pretty clearly that we are not afraid of crucifixion. Our real terror is of redemption, of the love of God. The memory of God is what we're really afraid of, because if we really remembered the memory of God, all this would be undone in an instant. We would not be continuing with the dream, because we would just see immediately that we didn't need it.
Is there anybody else besides me that does have a fear, or to be this wispy kind of a without a house of a body?
like cosmic oatmeal, like a big amorphous sort of.
You know, not remembering that experience and mm-hmm. just, you know, I know in the Ur text he compares the body to like a cobweb or something
right.
along those lines. There is a part of me that says, boy, that would be really strange to have that. And that's, of course, the ego, you know, I'm not along. But there is a part of me that it holds on for that. That, what would that experience be like kind of a thing.
Right, and so it feels a little scary, right? Because it feels like it's unknown.
It feels very scary, yes.
Yeah, and so that's exactly what, you know, fuels us to not want to go there, to, you know, to want to hang on to these separate identities. I absolutely identify with that, and what I used to be really afraid of was that if I was doing the course that I was going to get whisked away and suddenly I would just be poof, you know, back in reality. And what's helped me a lot in that fear is the gaining of trust that this is a very gentle undoing, that we aren't going to go there until we entirely, entirely, wholly want to. And so it's been like, the fear that I've had my, you know, hand around, because I've been, you know, so afraid of waking up, it's like I'm slowly sort of like opening up one finger and then another finger, and you let go only when you're ready. So that's at least what's helped me in that fear, but I absolutely identify with what you shared.
Now, I had an out-of-body experience when I was really fearful, and I finally said, I can't do this anymore. I was lifted above the body, and I can remember looking in a mirror, and my consciousness was above my body, and I loved it.
Mm.
I absolutely
cool.
loved it.
I think that's why the Course says that we should do this slowly and look at it a little at a time, because I know my major was transpersonal psychology in grad school, and we actually had a class on spiritual crisis. And I think it's when people go a little too far and they're not ready. They haven't, you know, done the work, and it can be scary. Like the ego freaks out because it's losing its grip in a way.
That's what happened to me, Mark. While I was in that state, I was fine. I think I even experienced union with God. In fact, I felt so much love that I said to God, you got to back off if my body's going to burn to a crisp. But then it lasted about 24 hours. And then I hadn't cleared the ego. My soul, my spirit knew I had to be rescued from the fear I was in. And but while I was in that, I didn't even want to look at my face. I was looking in a mirror. It was funny. And there was ooh, I don't want to look at that because that's not me. It was an odd, but I remember that thinking, it's not frightening. It's perfectly liberating is my memory of that.
And that's how it's going to be. It's absolutely not going to be frightening at all. It's just, you know, from the ego standpoint, trying to, again, you know, intellectually understand it can freak the ego out. Let's read another paragraph. It's continuing with the same idea about the fear of love. Your fear of attack is nothing compared to your fear of love. You would be willing to look even upon your savage wish to kill God's son if you did not believe that it saves you from love. For this wish caused the separation. You have protected it because you do not want the separation healed, and you realize that by removing the dark cloud that obscures it, your love for your father would impel you to answer his call and leap into heaven. You believe that attack is salvation to prevent you from this. For still deeper than the ego's foundation, and much stronger than it will ever be, is your intense and burning love of God and his for you. This is what you really want to hide. Whew. this I just got goosebumps just with this last sentence, actually the second to last sentence. Deeper than the ego's foundation and much stronger than it will ever be is your intense and burning love of God and his for you. This
mm-hmm.
is what you really want to hide. So I feel like this is deep. This sentence here, you've protected it because you do not want the separation healed, and you realize that by removing the dark cloud that obscures it, your love for your Father would impel you to answer his call and leap into heaven. So this is, it's that simple desire for not wanting the separation healed, and it takes different forms, like we've just said, you know, the fear of like, oh, what would it be like without a body, or, you know, just
it's
part
control.
Of my own control.
Mm-hmm.
I can touch part of my own mind that loves being Corinne, you know, that I can touch that, and I am you know, willing to look at that with the Holy Spirit and have been before. So there's, you know, these desires to not heal the separation that we are simply being asked to look at with the Holy Spirit as they come up, as we're ready to. Again, nothing ever needs to be forced. We never need to be ahead of where we are, because we're always in the perfect place for our greatest growth and learning. But I feel like this sort of, for me, sums up the course in a sense, because it's clear that love is what we're afraid of, and we're just having fun playing with these blown-up children's toys, like the course says, in this place that we've made up to experience this seeming state of separation.
And if we could remember, I mean, if you have a relationship with Jesus, when you're looking at Jesus, you're looking at God.
Mm-hmm.
You know? What is there to be afraid of?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we can find that same knowing in all of our brothers as well, in each other.
Right. Right.
Let's take the next paragraph, too. In honesty, is it not harder for you to say, I love, than I hate? You associate love with weakness and hatred with strength, and your own real power seems to you as your real weakness. For you could not control your joyous response to the call of love if you heard it, and the whole world you think you can, excuse me. I'm going to read that sentence again. For you could not control your joyous response to the call of love if you heard it, and the whole world you think you control would vanish. The Holy Spirit, then, seems to be attacking your fortress, for you would shut God out, and he does not will to be excluded. I'm going to keep reading. You have built your whole insane belief system because you think you would be helpless in God's presence, and you would save yourself from his love because you think it would crush you into nothingness. You are afraid it would sweep you away from yourself and make you little. For you believe that magnitude lies in defiance and that attack is grandeur. You think you have made a world which God would destroy, and by loving him, which you do, you would throw this world away, which you would. Therefore, you have used the world to cover your love, and the deeper you go into the blackness of the ego's foundation, the closer you come to the love that is hidden there, and it is this that frightens you. I'm getting lots of goosebumps tonight. This is really moving me, because think about it. Any fear, any circumstance that we seemingly have that causes us, again, any form of upset, as we have the tiny small willingness to take it to the Holy Spirit, our success is guaranteed, because love is underneath everything. It's underneath
mm-hmm.
everything. And so we can't get this wrong. We're all going to make it. We're all going to succeed, you know, the instant that we're ready. So it's just really, this feels really comforting to me, that love is beneath absolutely everything. And it says really clearly here, I think we may have highlighted this last week, that this sentence here, therefore you have used the world to cover your love. So the world is really a hiding place from God. We've come here to experience this, again, the state of crazy separation that is very, very convincing. And so we can just hide out and play around for a while.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can tell that when you bring up the subject of God if in a conversation, all of a sudden everybody gets, ooh, quiet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody wants to talk about that.
Right.
Because it brings up uncomfortable feelings, and they don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know why they don't want to talk about that. But I've been in situations where just a mention of God would just, my gosh, you know, put a kibosh on the whole affair.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing. People just don't want to. It's just like you say. It's the hidden foundation of everybody's
mm-hmm.
unconscious fear.
Yeah,
and they just shut
up. And beliefs about God too have been so bitterly misused on the ego's behalf. You know, and feeling like you have to convert somebody, or you know, people imposing certain beliefs upon other groups of people. And so there's been a lot of a lot of instances throughout history of the ego even trying to use God for its purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else have anybody have anything coming up? I can't believe we're almost at the top of the hour already. How about we'll read one more paragraph and see if that feels right to stop. You can accept insanity because you made it, but you cannot accept love because you did not. You would rather be slaves of the crucifixion than sons of God in redemption. For your individual death is more valued than your living oneness, and what is given you is not so dear as what you made. You are more afraid of God than of the ego, and love cannot enter where it is not welcome. But hatred can, for it enters of its will and cares not for yours.
Mm.
The reason you must look upon your delusions and not keep them hidden is that they do not rest on their own foundation. In concealment, they appear to do so, and thus they seem to be self-sustained. This is the fundamental illusion on which they rest. For beneath them, and concealed as long as they are hidden, is the loving mind that thought it made them in anger. And the pain in this mind is so apparent when it is uncovered that its need of healing cannot be denied. Not all the tricks and games you offer it can heal it, for here is the real crucifixion of God's Son.
Mm.
And yet he is not crucified. I can't stop there. And yet he is not crucified. Here is both his pain and his healing, for the Holy Spirit's vision is merciful and his remedy is quick. Do not hide suffering from his sight, but bring it gladly to him. Lay before his eternal sanity all your hurt and let him heal you. Do not leave any spot of pain hidden from his light, and search your minds carefully for any thoughts which you may fear to uncover. For he will heal every little thought which you have kept to hurt you and cleanse it of its littleness, restoring it to the magnitude of God. That feels like a better place to end.
Right.
So there, again, is the remedy, and it's, again, so simple that our egos get insulted, that all we're asked to do is to have our tiny bit of willingness and bring that willingness to the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit is the one that does the work.
Corin, when you say bring it to the Holy Spirit,
uh-huh.
Is there a process that you go by? You just sit and get still and go within?
My bringing it to the Holy Spirit is sort of a feeling of just not keeping it, but not just, you know, forgetting about it, but just actively in my mind, whatever the belief is, the issue is, it's almost like I imagine handing, you know, a package over to the Holy Spirit, and not, you know, really a package, it's a thought, but it's, a moment of pause and a moment of touching my willingness and imagining, in some sense, it's really just a feeling more than a picture in my mind of
mm-hmm.
releasing whatever it is into the Holy Spirit's arms.
I found that on Nook's page, you mentioned Nook a couple of times.
Uh-huh.
She has the atonement process where
yes.
you say this is an illusion. It cannot be real because it is not a part, you know, it is in my mind and it's not in the mind. But I acknowledge that, you know, that I want my mistakes corrected.
Mm-hmm.
You accept the correction and then you accept the atonement. I have found that very effective too.
That is super helpful. Yes, I love how she breaks it down.
Yes, very helpful.
Yeah,
especially for things that are a little bit difficult.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
wow.
Wonderful. What a
awesome
call.
Yeah, hey, family. Hey, Corinne.
Oh, hey, Carla. How you doing?
Oh, I'm grateful that I came in on the part I came in on to hear you reading about giving over what bothers us, what hurts us to the Holy Spirit, because interestingly enough, and I know nobody else has struggled with this, it's just me. I have an issue that continues to bother me, that's a trigger for me. And it generally involves the dating scene where if I'm dating someone and they disappear and without saying anything, it seems to be a pattern. And so lately it happened again. And so I go into my pattern of response. And I'm really tired of that. So it's interesting that basically all I can do is just to keep giving it over because I'm having a hard time with that. Yeah. So that, you know, but nobody else goes through that but me.
Of course.
We all like rejection.
No, nobody goes through that but me. You know, and at this point, you know, the latest you know, there was some issues going on for them that didn't involve me, but of course I don't know that if there's just complete silence on the other line. So it just triggers me, and I haven't gotten to a place where I feel complete peace about that, regardless of what the person is or isn't doing. And it feels to me, what brings me peace is just to say, hey, could you? I'm working on myself, but do you mind not doing that?
Thank you so much for sharing, Carla.
Sure.
That's great. I'm glad you came on when you did, too. All we got to do is take that tiny bit of willingness to the Holy Spirit, no matter what it is.
So we're
at the top of the hour. Thank you, everyone, so much for being here, and we'll continue next week. So have a good one, everyone.
All right. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Mark? Hello?
Mark?
Oh, are you asking for Paul?
Paul. Is it Paul?
Yes, it's Paul. I think he hopped off the line already.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.